Brian Heath has been in the wine business for 20 years and is really successful doing it. He and his wife bought a vineyard and they've grown vertically, and now it's Heath Family Brands. Heath Family Brands that owns, I don't know, about half a dozen different wine brands in Fredericksburg area. And they were named the number one vineyard in Texas on TripAdvisor. And Brian Heath joins us right now. It's good to have you with us.
Thanks. I appreciate you having me on.
This is a fascinating, I've been reading about your company. It's really a fascinating evolution. It seemed like it started out, did it start out as a serious business or was this sort of a hobby?
You know, it's an interesting question because I had left my corporate financial services career and I was really interested in the wine business. And while I enjoyed wine, what really drew me to the business was the business itself. It's kind of a fun, vertically integrated style of business because it's agriculture, manufacturing, and retail. So if you want to be creative, you have a lot of the levers available to you. And, you know, you can change the way you distribute, you can change the type of wines you make, all of that. And so, but I also wanted something that would be fun to do. And I anticipated it would be, well, still a legitimate business. I didn't anticipate it would become what it became over the time frame. And my wife and I had an interesting conversation. And when the 08 credit meltdown hit, I said, you know, I probably should actually make some money at this. And that's when we really dug in.
Well, I know a lot of people started, have gone to the wine business, and it seemed like, you know, it was sort of a tax loss item and, you know, way to do some write-offs. But it turns out you've really turned this into a business. I've seen pictures of your operation down there, and you've done what some other vineyards, especially in, you know, I've seen in California and France have done, is that on the one hand, you make wine, but you're also in the entertainment business. People coming by, doing tastings, eating food, buying wine. I mean, you are to some degree an entertainer too.
Well, you know, it was a conscious decision to really lean into the hospitality and agritourism aspect of the business. You know, there's different ways you can distribute wine. People are familiar when you walk into, you know, Central Market or Specs and you see a bottle on the shelf. There's a whole distribution model that does that, but we really wanted to stick with the direct-to-consumer model because we could have influence and frame the experience, which then becomes how people see your wine. And so we did a lot of different actions over time. And the phrase we always used is we wanted to create a transportative experience. So when people came within the property, they felt like they were leaving Texas to go to the Rhone Valley in France or Tuscany or Napa.
And yeah, that's a great way to do it, but that is a slow way to do it. I mean, it's sort of organic. I mean, I would imagine they're sticky. Once you get them, you know, they tend to stay with you. But boy, that's that takes a while.
It does. And, you know, I mean, a lot of your listeners are business people. And one of the things is, you know, it's one of the age old challenges of almost any business. It's volume and rate. And in the direct to consumer part of the business, you control the experience, but you also control the margin. And so as a result, what happens is while you sell less wine, you have a more direct related experience to the customer. And you're right. They do tend to, they become loyal because they like not just the brand, but they like the people, the experience, the environment that they operate in. And because we're the manufacturer and we distribute directly through our tasting rooms, from a financial perspective, the model also works.
Yeah. You know, there was an interesting article in Bloomberg, and with your financial background, I bet you still read it. But they had the story, they were talking about really global wine consumption. But they said that global wine consumption is at the lowest level in 25 years, down 14% since 2018. These people are drinking less, but they're paying more. They're being more discriminated in what they buy. But they said wine tourism is up 20% since 2016. So you really have hit on that sweet spot.
You know, it's, you know, there's a lot of discussion about, you know, preferences changing generationally, Gen Z versus millennials versus baby boomers. And, you know, there are absolute influences. You know, there's things like the THC component of people's choices. And I just read an article the other day that regular users of THC are higher than regular users of alcohol in the U.S. on an absolute number basis.
Wait a minute, higher? You mean there are more of them?
Yeah, there are more people. There are, okay. Yeah, there are more people that are regular users, which they defined as more than 20 days out of 30 in the month, that use THC that regularly than use alcohol.
That's astounding.
However, it is astonishing. And there are a lot more people, though, that actually drink alcohol, but they're not, quote, regular users. You know, they'll have a glass of wine two or three times a week.
So the evolution, your personal evolution, I find really interesting. So you started out as an engineer at TI, then you were a stockbroker, then you ran stockbrokers, and now you end up, you know, running really an ever-expanding vineyard and hospitality operation. Was that a linear progression? It seems like there's a leap in there someplace.
I read a book years ago, and I can't remember the title of it, but it was about people that just made large career changes in the middle of their life. And that was one for me, shifting from, finance, which was, a pretty intense and stressful environment. I enjoyed it. I worked for a great company, Ameriprise Financial, but I was ready to do something more entrepreneurial. And I also wanted to do it in Texas, and I wanted to do it in Fredericksburg. And everything, the stars kind of aligned. And, I make the joke, I'm not a very good surfer, but when you see a big wave, you paddle hard. And, we were right on the front end of this big growth in the Texas wine industry. And we felt lucky to be part of it. And, this area is now the epicenter of Texas wine. And, we get, I don't know the exact number, but according to like phone data, I think Fredericksburg sees 2 million tourists a year. And so our area is regularly visited. And we, over time, just kept expanding. So we added a sparkling wine tasting room. We did a couple of acquisitions. We have a couple of urban tasting rooms. And all of it just sort of evolved and made sense one step at a time as the brands expanded.
So how cyclical is your business? And you have pretty good weather down there year-round.
Yeah, there are seasonal aspects. The busiest times are when you might expect in Central Texas, which would be, say, Valentine's Day to middle of May, and then again, October through, mid-December. But also, interestingly, July is pretty busy. And then I always tell people, if you want to have a little less people around when you want to do the experience, come during the week, come during August or September. Because while there are still people around, it's not as crowded as some of those other periods of time.
I know in Napa they work heavily on memberships, and the other thing they tell me in Napa, and for that matter in the south of France too, is that it's a competitive business, but when you bunch a bunch of wineries together, it tends to reinforce the business for each other.
Yeah, it's a lot like restaurants. They say that same thing about restaurants. You'll see a place and Dallas, where there'll be 10 restaurants within about a block of each other. And you would think that the competition would drown them out. But what it does is it draws more people to that area because there is choice. And we've experienced the same thing in the wine business here. As more wineries open up and offer different style of architecture, different style of wine, different experiences, we've just found that it draws more people because they can make a weekend of it.
Yeah. I mean, the tourism aspect is fascinating. But again, back to the business. All businesses have a lot of variables. And we've already talked about changing taste, the economy, whether people will pay up and we're cutting back. But you've got like commodity prices that you've got to watch, and droughts and funguses and tax laws. I mean, that's a pretty full plate.
You know, it is. And like, this is a really good example this year. For instance, our vineyards, we manage and operate about right around 70 acres of grapes in the Texas Hill Country. But we also purchase a lot of grapes from growers in the Texas High Plains up near Lubbock. And this year we had a late freeze down in our area, which wiped out all the white grapes. And so then up in the High Plains, it's like you said, there can be hail, there can be freezes, et cetera. And we've had to pivot. But the good news is there, as the wine industry has grown, so has the viticulture side, which is the vineyards. So a lot more people have planted. And as a result, we've been able to establish some new relationships fairly quickly with other growers to be able to fill the needs that we weren't able to fill before. But you are correct. I mean, it's never a dull moment.
So what's next for you? You've got you've got sparkling wines, you've got invention wines, K Estate, you've got operations in West Texas and Fredericksburg. Are you right-sized yet?
You know, it's interesting. We just, you know, we have a strategic team and we talk about what's next. And, you know, I'm a big believer that you either grow or die. There is no maintenance. And so I anticipate that we will continue to identify opportunities. You know, honestly, we have a pretty big footprint in the Fredericksburg area now with basically five tasting rooms in Gillespie County, which is where Fredericksburg is. And we have one tasting room in Georgetown, Texas. And so we've looked at some opportunities to expand elsewhere in the state. And you know, we're doing some of the research. But generally what will happen is, as long as we're open to it, something will present itself that will make sense. And then we put it through the CBA ringer to see if we think it'll make sense or not for us. And, you know, if we like it, then we move forward with it.
So is your membership based primarily in Texas?
It is. We actually shipped to, I think, 31 states now. And so we have members in all of those states. However, the bulk of our membership is in Texas. Interestingly, the percentage has actually gone down some. And we have one of the larger wine clubs in the country, not just in Texas. And so it is the, you know, the lifeblood of our business. And we've actually made some business decisions that some of your listeners might find interesting. Like, we've limited our patios and our restaurants to members only. And people say, well, why would you do that? And we did it during COVID because we just didn't have space for everybody. And the members are the ones that are the most loyal to our business. And so we made that change and everybody liked it so well and it worked for the business that we've maintained it. The good news is anybody who comes in can become a member that day and participate in the patios and the restaurant. So it's all good.
Sounds perfect. Brian Heath is the CEO of Heath Family Brands, which seem to be ever expanding. Good to spend some time with you. Thanks a lot.
Thank you.
Thanks for more of our conversation. Go to krld.com/CEO. I'm David Johnson, News Radio 1080 KRLD.